Hello and welcome to the Trading Blows podcast. I'm Alejandro Madrid alongside Danny Savitsky, and let's get right into it with our first topic, the jump ball. Okay, Danny, the NBA trade deadline, which passed last Thursday at noon, was one of the best we've seen in quite a long time. Who is your big winner of the trade deadline?
You know, it's tough for me with my connections to the New Jersey Nets. I think they're a contender for the best trade of the deadline, but I'm going to go with the New York. Let me tell you why. The Nets made a great trade for Deron Williams. I think Deron Williams is a better player than Carmelo Anthony, but the Knicks simply made the better trade because they're in a better position to improve with an acquisition. They had a better foundation, and they got significantly better with Carmelo Anthony. The Nets were much lower to begin with, and while Williams improved them, he doesn't put them into playoff contention right away. And you also have the question of whether he's going to resign next year. If he doesn't resign, then this trade looks awful. If they can manage to re-sign him by bringing in other pieces, then it looks like a great move. But you can't say it's better than acquiring Carmelo Anthony until you see what happens next summer.
Well, I'm going to take the Nets. I think with the Knicks, they did a good job bringing in Carmelo Anthony, but their defense is going to be absolutely awful. We saw them get beat by the Cavs, so definitely some concerns there on defense for the Knicks. With the Nets, Deron Williams has already pledged to stay next year, and we will see if they can build around him. He said that was the terms of his staying. He wants to see if the Nets can bring in someone else to build a good foundation, and Prokhorov has shown a penchant for going out there and courting some of the biggest names. If New Jersey can get one of them, that could be a very good team playoff contender moving forward.
I'm definitely wary of the Knicks defense because, you know, they gave up 108 points to the worst offense in the league in the Bucks in their first game, then 115 to the worst team in the league in the Cavs. So they're going to have some problems on defense. And while it was good to see them hold the Heat to 86 points yesterday, it's not going to be normal for them to hold good teams like that. So they're going to have to win by putting up a ton of points and outscoring their opponents. That said, when you have two players like Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire, you put yourself in a position where you can upset the best because you have this star power that's capable of taking over games and besting other better teams in a seven-game series.
This is something we talked about earlier on when the trade deadline happened. We had a conversation and we talked about how Carmelo Anthony, he's more of a volume scorer. He's not a guy that's going to be very efficient from the floor, but he will put up a lot of points. And I would rather take a guy like Deron Williams who can score efficiently and put up similar numbers to Carmelo in terms of points and distribute the basketball. I've watched a lot of Nets and Devin Harris could not get the ball into the paint, whereas Deron Williams, he's going to be able to do that. Brook Lopez will be a much better player because Deron Williams is on the floor.
Well, there's no doubt that I think Deron Williams is better than Carmelo Anthony. There's no question about that. The only thing I think about with respect to this trade in favor of the Knicks is that they already have Carmelo locked up. He's signed that extension. He's with the team for the long term. The Nets, I agree they had to take that risk, bring in someone who might not re-sign, but it's just a big question mark. So at evaluating these comparative trades, I think you have to lean in favor of the sure bet instead of something that could blow up in the Nets' face down the line.
Well, I think the Nets have put themselves in a good position and that Deron Williams has said he will give them time to build around him. That certainly puts the onus on the Nets. So if it doesn't work out, it's all on them because Williams has said he will stay. Also, I think the Knicks gave up a little too much for Carmelo Anthony. There wasn't that huge of a market for him, and they went out and they kind of outbid themselves a little bit. Whereas the Nets, I think they gave up a lot of talent, but also talent that wasn't particularly proven, like a Derek Favors, who may be a great player down the road, but his progress hasn't been particularly fast.
Here's the thing. I think we view the Nets trade as so much better because it happened right on the spot. The Carmelo Anthony stuff, it was building up for 6 months. We had time to analyze every little detail, critique every little thing. So we weren't as high on it as we probably would have been had the Knicks come out of nowhere and made that trade. I agree the Knicks gave up more in Gallinari and Chandler and the first round picks they gave up and everything they gave up. Derek Favors, you know, he could be a good player. It's going to take a while. Devin Harris, he's not your cornerstone point guard. And they give up a pick in this year's draft, which probably isn't going to be very good. And Golden State's pick next year, which we'll see about that. But still, I think the Knicks were in a better position to make an acquisition like this than the Nets were, simply because they were already at least in the talks of.
Certainly, both teams made good moves. If you had to name one big loser for the trade deadline, who would it be?
Well, it's got to go to the Boston Celtics. Kendrick Perkins is a defensive centerpiece on that team. Not only that, he had a major emotional connection to a lot of the players on this team, and you could see when they went out and they played against depleted Denver in their first game after the trade, didn't look like a team that's going to compete for a championship. Jeff Green, he's a good scorer. He's a good piece off the bench. But Kendrick Perkins, he's the best post defender in the NBA. Dwight Howard's the best defensive center overall. Kendrick Perkins is the best post defender. And when you have players like Paul Pierce and Ray Allen who aren't top perimeter defenders, Rajon Rondo is obviously good, but Pierce and Allen aren't really top defenders. That defense focuses on bringing players into the paint where Garnett and Perkins could take care of them. Now that's no longer an option. Now you have Shaq, who is not a factor in pick-and-roll defense. He's awful. So this team is one that has won on defense every year since they made those trades for Garnett and Allen. Now you go and you throw that all out the window by making.
See, I don't mind the trade by Boston because if you look at it, Kendrick Perkins, he's out 2 to 3 weeks with a knee injury, and they pick up a nice wing piece in Jeff Green, whereas Oklahoma City traded away one of their glue guys. So we'll see if that pans out. Kendrick Perkins will have to get healthy, though.
It's only 2 to 3 weeks, and the thing about the Celtics is they're not too worried about seeding. They don't need Perkins for these 2 to 3 weeks. What they need him for is matchups against the Magic and the Lakers in the playoffs, where he can handle Dwight Howard and he can handle Pau Gasol. But now they don't have that anymore. Now they're going to have to rely on Shaq and Nenad Krstić and Jermaine O'Neal. You think they're comfortable with that?
I wouldn't be. I certainly wouldn't be. And now let's move on to our next topic, the technical foul. You're listening to the Trading Blows podcast with Alejandro Madrid and Danny Savitsky. Now, yesterday in the Louisville-Pittsburgh game, Louisville led Pittsburgh by 3 in overtime. They lay the ball in with 1 second to go to go up by 5. And all of a sudden, a male cheerleader appears for Louisville on the court. He steps up, grabs the ball, and throws it in the air. And what do you know? A technical foul is assessed. And Pittsburgh goes to the line, drains 2 free throws. They get the ball with 1 second left. They don't make the 3. But what do you make of this male cheerleader coming onto the court and getting a technical foul?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the refs on this one. This is definitely a T for the Louisville cheerleader. It is your job as the cheerleader to help the team win by rallying the fans in support of your players. It is not your job to get out of control while the game is still going on to go out on the court and do something ridiculous like this. We saw last year with USC, there was a manager who may have used an expletive and ended up getting a T on the USC bench. He got fired. So Rick Pitino said in his press conference, it's probably time for this guy to find another sport. So I agree with him there. This guy should go. This is absolutely absurd.
I can't believe that he was so amped up that he comes onto the court and touches the basketball. What was he thinking? Obviously, he wasn't to be able to do something like that. His main job is to pump up the fans, as you said. Why isn't he turned towards the crowd, waving them on? His team is up by 5. They're about to get the big win over Pittsburgh, and instead he comes on the court. If they had lost that game, Rick Pitino would have been so angry. I would not have wanted to see him in the postgame press conference.
Oh, it would have been awful. It would have been awful. If you're not on this team, just stay off the court. Like, what are you doing? I understand he may have thought that the game was over because there was half a second left on the clock when this happened. But control yourself. Control yourself. It's not that big a deal. This is awful. This is ridiculous.
You know, we talked about staying off the court. Students rush the court, but they wait until the horn sounds.
Yes.
You wait until the game is completely over. You never want to put your team in danger by getting a technical foul. Unbelievable that he comes onto the court, and like you said, I don't think there's any place for that. Cheerleaders and mascots getting way too much press these days in the game of college basketball.
No reason for these guys to be in the news. They just need to do their jobs, and that's it.
And now let's move on to our final segment, the walk-off home run, where we rant and rave about something that has gone very right in the past week. When the Giants come to town, it's bye-bye, baby. You're listening to the Trading Blows podcast with Alejandro Madrid and Danny Savitsky, and this week, our walk-off home run goes to USC basketball, who has won 5 of their last 6 and 4 in a row. We were down on them when we talked about the Texas loss. We pondered whether Kevin O'Neal was on the hot seat, and all of a sudden, here they come.
It's funny that we go from dumping on them because in context of Texas's loss, but here we are, seeing that they might get into the tournament. You know, I still think it's a long shot. They have to win out. They have to show that they can do something in the conference tournament. But the fact that they're even in the conversation right now, considering some of the losses they've had, is really astounding. And you've got to give credit to Kevin O'Neill and these players for sticking at it and showing some perseverance.
Kevin O'Neill made a great lineup change before they went to the Bay Area. He puts Donte Smith in to start for Maurice Jones, bring Maurice Jones off the bench. Jones had a great second half at Cal off the bench, 22 points to lift that team, and they got a Bay Area sweep for the first time in 19 years. Unbelievable considering the way they had played on the road. Certainly a new energy with this team. Their offense is much more spread out, much more aggressive, and that's why they've been able to beat teams like number 10 Arizona at the Galen Center. But you look at it, those bad losses, they've lost to six teams with an RPI of over 100. Three of them have an RPI of over 200. Not something you want to hang your hat on.
Not at all. But when you look at this team, if you were going to give out a most improved player in the Pac-10, I think Donte Smith would be it. Would be someone in the running. Because last year, he was basically a backup point guard, not doing much at all. This year, he is raining threes. Raining them. It's ridiculous. He is helping this team win so much, and I never would have expected it from him.
I completely agree. He's really toned in his three-point shooting. It'll be interesting to see how USC is looked at by the selection committee. They are definitely surging, and you look at it, a lot of the bubble teams they're being compared to, similar RPIs. It's those bad losses that's going to kill USC in the end. I still think that they must win the Pac-10 tournament if they want to make it, at the very least. If they want to get into the serious consideration, they must win out in Seattle and Pullman and then make it to the finals of the Pac-10 tournament.
I think they got to get to the finals of the tournament if they want a chance to get in. You know, I think this is a team that could do things if it got into the tournament. If you're looking at this team and, you know, you talked about the eye test on Reign of Troy yesterday. This is a team, you look at it and you say, well, they beat Texas. They beat Tennessee. They beat Arizona. They came within a point of beating Kansas. This could be one of your upset teams in the tournament if they manage to get in.
They are an absolute nightmare if you see them in the bracket. A few years ago, Arizona was a 12 seed, made it all the way to the Sweet 16, eventually lost to number one Louisville. USC could be a team like that, depending on the matchups. You get a team that plays man-to-man defense, and oh no, USC will stomp them. Just a very tough out, not someone you want to see in the tournament if you're an opposing team. But USC, they have to do a lot if they want to get in the tournament. I know that they're getting onto some radars right now, but just too many bad losses. They lost that Rider game by 22 at home. Tough pill to swallow. And then they've gone 1-3 against the Oregon schools this year. I can't imagine them making the tournament without winning the Pac-10.
Yeah, there are definitely some sticking points in the schedule this year that are going to make the selection committee go, I don't know about this team. But I think if it gets to the point where it's a toss-up for them, in or out, I think just their potential for upsets, which is what everyone wants to see them. I think that might get them in as a very low seed.
One of the selection criteria is last 10 games played. And if USC wins the next two, they will have won six in a row. And if they win to get to the Pac-10 finals, they will have won eight of their last 10. That's a pretty good stat if you're the committee looking to put them in. I just don't see it happening. I really don't.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with my gut and say they're not going to make it.
But look out, NIT. If that's where they end up, they could be a very tough team in the NIT. Perhaps win that if they play well enough. This has been the Trading Blows podcast with Alejandro Madrid and Danny Savitsky. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.